web at usaradio.com.
This is an important message to all listeners. If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes to the IRS, the tax pros at OIC Tax want to help you. OIC Tax is dedicated to helping taxpayers just like you with their IRS problems.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS. I was working long hours and weekends just to make ends meet. To make matters worse, the IRS was about to garnish my wages, and I needed to file several years of back tax returns. Then I called the tax professionals at OIC Tax. They stopped the IRS from garnishing my wages. They even placed my account into the IRS's financial hardship program so I don't have to make any payments to the IRS. That's right, no payments to the IRS while I'm in this program.
Call OIC Tax today to see if you qualify for the IRS's financial hardship program. Call 800-790-5988. Call now and mention you heard this radio commercial and receive 10% off their already low fees. 800-790-5988. That number, 800-790-5988. Call now, 800-790-5988.
Focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Welcome to the show. No, I'm kidding. Welcome back. You're tuned in to the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. We prepare ourselves and our vast nationwide audience for yet another hour of the best in money information. Happy to have you here with us, Wealth Ed, Biz TV, and radio folks all across the country, standing by to give you the advice that you need. I'm Johnny Dean, hosting here. Professor Rick Plum joins me as always from Lucia Capital Group. And as you might expect, we've got a whole lot of things to talk about this hour, some stuff that we didn't get to in previous hours. I don't even know if we can get to all of it this hour. We're going to give it a shot, though. But your chance to call in is right now, because we take your money questions first. You got a money strategy question? Maybe you'd like to discuss what options you have at retirement? Well, we're here as your financial resource. You just grab your phone. You give us a call at this number, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You can also send us your email questions or comments. We'll get to more of those this hour. You do so by going to wealthed.com, our website. You click on the Find Your Answer link, type in your question, and send it to us. This is what we do on the show. We answer your questions, and we do so both on and off the air. Wealth education, that's what we try to do every day. We provide important information for you and your retirement years. We're here live on the air, but you can also contact the Brain Trust off the air if you want at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Their number off the air. You got the opportunity there to meet with the Brain Trust to go over your individual situation with Lucia Capital Group. Know what your options are, all right? Trust me, folks, you cannot do this stuff. I will tell you this. You should not do this all on your own, all right? Too much to make up. You need the Brain Trust advisor to guide you along the way. Call Professor Plummer, any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. On the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We have some folks that have been hanging on, so hang on a little bit longer. But Mario has been waiting the longest there in Los Angeles, California. We'll start this hour with Mario. Hi, Mario. How can we help you today?
I wanted to know, I purchased a home in 1986 with my wife, and we paid $138. I divorced in 1990, and I refinanced to pay her $47,000 for her to sign a quitclaim deed for her portion of the equity. Is my cost basis the original $138 we paid, or does it increase because I paid her for her portion of the equity?
There's probably $47,000. There probably is some increase to the basis. But technically, you owned half of it, so your basis and half of it was half of the $138, and then you bought out the other half by paying not just the $47,000, because you took over the whole loan and gave her an additional amount. So that should be an increase of $47,000 in the overall basis, because you bought out the other half. But I'd have to look at the worksheets. For me, I'd say, yeah, I bought it out. I paid $138 to begin with, and then I paid $47, but you really didn't pay $47 for an additional purchase, because you paid $138 for two sides of it. You owned half of it, she owned half of it, and then you paid $47 plus the increase in the loan for the other half. And so I'd have to look at how they're calculating that on the worksheets. But from just a basic idea, I'd say, yeah, because $47,000 was, the house was worth a lot more when you bought her out, right?
Right.
So you probably have to look at what it was worth when you bought her out, and then you paid the 47. My guess is the 47 will increase your basis to the, you know, $185,000 mark.
Okay. Can I ask a question about state taxes?
State of California?
Federal,
yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, they're not easy. They're not high. They're pretty high. Go ahead.
So the question is, if I get $250,000, that I don't have to pay to the federal government, is it the same for?
On a sale of a home, California has complied exactly with the exclusion or non-exclusion of gain. So they go by the same basic, you know, if you can exclude $250,000 in federal, you're going to exclude it in California. So California has complied with the federal rules on the exclusion of primary residence gain.
Makes it a lot easier.
In fact,
thank you very much.
All 50 states have done that. All 50 states have complied and have the same treatment for primary residence as the federal government does.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mario, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. That's helpful that they did that.
Well, it makes it a little bit easier.
I think it makes it a lot easier. Yeah. At first, I think there were some states that hadn't when they...
Well, it took a little while for them all to ratify and adopt it. But
yeah.
It would have been a disaster for them if they had.
It would have been, yeah. All right, 877-PLANNER. Paul, hang on a second because John is up next in Ashland, Virginia. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How are you all?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. I have a couple of questions in regards to cash reserves on tap to be used during poor markets when you're retired. I like the idea of having 2 or 3 years set aside.
Right.
How bad does the market need to be, though, before you use those funds? I mean, is it an all or nothing thing? Is it,
no.
If the market's down 2 or 3%, do you go ahead and withdraw from the portfolio and wait for a bigger downturn? What kind of guidelines do y'all use?
Well, it goes by individuals, and so this is something that you write ahead of time while we're being somewhat rational about the market, so that in the middle of a downturn, we don't try to second guess ourselves and reassess what's going on.
Right.
So the idea what you're talking about is you've pulled some money off the table, or you've put money on the side that you don't need to spend in the next several years. That is basically what we call dry powder for those bad months usually in the market, like we saw in 2008 and 2009.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be an all or nothing issue. It can be I've put $40,000 aside. I'm making these numbers up. If the market goes down by 10%, maybe I buy in with 15-20% of the money. And there's a succession, you know, kind of a on the way down, buying in if it gets worse and worse and worse. By no means will you probably ever be able to pick the exact bottom of the market to get in. So a lot of times people will go in, they'll take a quarter of their money when it's down 15%. But the idea, along with many things that we do in investing, especially when you're buying stocks or other investments that have up and down potential, is to look at it when you're not emotionally tied to what's happening in the market and say, if the market does this, I will do that. Just like when you buy a stock, you should have an idea that if I buy it for X, I will sell it when it hits this market high or this market low, and I'm not going to second guess myself. And you do that now so that you're not in the emotional aspects of, wow, it's on a run, let's stay with it longer, or, oh my gosh, you know what's happening, maybe I should be buying and doubling down. So you create the rules, but when you get into the system, before you get emotionally involved into what's going on. So when we're talking about value averaging, especially value averaging on the downside, it needs to be done at the beginning, before the market goes down. And so you say, okay, I've got X amount of dollars sitting on the side. If the market goes down X, I will do this. If it goes down 2x X, then I will do more, or whatever the case is. However you've, and put your rules, basically rules of engagement with the market in place. You want to do the same thing on the upside, but it's a little bit easier on the upside. The emotions aren't quite as strong to sell a gain as they are to buy into a downturn.
Yeah, I guess the question I had was slightly different, though. It was if you're already retired and you're living off your portfolio, I like the idea of if you have a 2008, you don't sell to fund your next year's expenses
right. Because
the market is down. So you're going to tap into this bucket that you have with just cash in it.
Well, if this money is the money that you may need to spend if the market goes down further, then no, you don't put any of that in. You got to have that. You're going to live off of that. In fact, I would say you should be taking distributions from the cash account for the next year or two, and then replenish the cash account if the market's up.
Right, but I guess the question is, how bad does the market need to be, in your opinion, before you would use the cash reserves instead of selling investments?
Well, if this is the cash reserve, I think we're not on the same page here.
No, we're not.
If this is the cash reserve that I have to be able to live off of when the market's down, then I can't spend any of it because I have to have the staying power to get past the market downturn. When we talk about value averaging, it's a separate and identifiable account away from the money I need to live off. We talk about bucket number one, having enough cash or near cash assets in it to provide 5, 6, 7 years worth of income. That is not the same account that we're talking about that we value average with. The money we need for the next 5, 6, 7 years doesn't get hit for market timing, market value averaging. That's a different issue. And so the money that we have set aside, hopefully we have it set aside from selling some profits when we had better than expected profits, that's off to the side, and that I know I don't need to spend in the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And so if it's money that I'm going to live off for the next 2 years, I am not using that to value average into the market, even if it's down 50%.
Right, and I agree with that. I guess I think we're still talking two different animals here.
Yeah.
The idea is let's say January 1st, you would take enough out of your portfolio in a hypothetical to cover your current year's expenditures, and you're going to use that throughout the year.
Right.
But if it was a bad year, let's say the year before, I may not want to sell, and so I've got this little secret stash over here that instead of selling from my portfolio, I'll use $50,000 from this kind of emergency, not emergency money, but this other fund.
But that fund, in my case, isn't selling. An emergency fund. That is bucket number one.
Yeah, I see kind of where this is, where you guys are, or where the divide is. John, I got to take a break. Hold on. We can talk a little bit more off the air if you need to. But I also got to get to Paulette in Langley, Washington. So, folks, everybody who's on hold, hang on. We're going to get to everybody. Just got to take a quick break here. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, coming right back.
Lucia Capital Group advisors travel the country talking to individuals about retirement at open seminars, but they can also schedule a private seminar at your company and customize a retirement planning presentation for your employees.
I'm Rick Plum, certified financial planner.
And I'm Terry Keyes, chartered financial consultant.
We'll teach you a strategy to integrate Social Security benefits with your other investments.
We'll talk about lifetime income strategies and what alternatives to stocks and bonds may fit into your retirement plan.
We'll tell you what you should know about managed portfolios, and we'll discuss your concerns about outliving your money, stock market volatility, and managing your taxes.
Business owners and HR managers can now schedule private retirement planning meetings for organizations of 50 or more. Call Lucia Capital Group at 800-644-1150 to schedule. That's 800-644-1150. Rick Plum and Terry Keyes are registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member SIPC. Lucia Securities is a wholly owned subsidiary of Lucia Capital Group, a registered investment advisor. All investments are subject to risk, including loss of principal.
Every investor has their own unique financial fingerprint, each with their own unique concerns.
Concern that I have is that I'm not going to have enough money for retirement.
At Lucia Capital Group, we hear your biggest concerns.
Taxes in retirement. Taxes are already biting us pretty good.
Retirement in today's economy can be overwhelming.
Most of my 401k is in a high-risk investment. I'm concerned about that.
If you're worried about outliving your money, the unpredictability of the stock market, or risks associated with inflation, call Lucia Capital Group for a complimentary plan review. Learn how the bucket strategy is designed to provide opportunities for diversification and investment options in a low interest rate environment. Schedule a consultation at no cost by calling 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150, or visit luciacap.com, luciacap.com.
Securities offered through Lucia Securities LLC, member FINRA SIPC, a subsidiary of Lucia Capital Group, an affiliate of Lucia Wealth Services. The strategy involves investment subject to risk.
QL1, this is Control, checking in to see how excited you are for launch. Over.
Well, actually, I'm kind of bored.
You're about to travel 17,000 miles per hour through Earth's atmosphere, and you're bored?
It just doesn't sound that exciting after using Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. I was able to get a completely online custom mortgage approval in minutes.
Wow, that is impressive.
3, 2, 1.
Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com. Push button. Get mortgage.
Rocket. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. and you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 877-439-MYTV.
The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money.
Call 877-439-MYTV.
At just $24.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card.
That's 1-877-439-MYTV.
Having some fun here with you folks, on and off the air, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Got some money questions still left to answer. We still have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about with regard to primary residences and stuff, so we will get to that, some more of your emails as well. But of course, your phone calls always come first, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. All right, Paulette in Langley has been hanging on for quite a long time. Paulette, thanks for hanging on. How can we help you today?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
In 2013, we suffered a huge financial loss by having to redo a redo of a remodel that we paid a contractor over $100,000 for, and we ended up having to spend another $120,000 to repair everything because we had to take it down to the cement.
Ouch.
So what? Yeah, it was awful. So one of the things we've been thinking about, my husband and I, is to rent our downstairs, which is quite lovely, as an Airbnb to recuperate some of our loss, because we had to take it out of our savings. We took all the entire amount
had to come
out of our retirement.
Yeah.
And we finished the house, and it's all right now, but we're still out all that money. I wondered how if we did this, how that would affect our taxes when we do sell the house. We're in our 70s. We hope to stay here at least 10 more years, but would that affect our taxes adversely?
To some degree, but yes, there's going to be some depreciation that you'll end up recapturing later on, but that helps you with the income now. There are some issues where you're not renting out the entire property. I'd have to go through all the worksheets. Well, let's take this on the worst case scenario. A portion of the house would be treated as a rental.
Yes, it's downstairs, the downstairs only.
And you've owned this house for a long time, though, right?
Yes, we have, since 1998.
Okay, so you've had it for a long time, and in another 10 years, you're going to have it for a long time again. So there might be a proration of some of the gain. So to the extent that some of the gain is taxable, it'll come back as a capital, long-term capital gain. Any depreciation that you take on your tax returns obviously will come back as a recapture later on. But it helps you with your income now. So I'm pretty sure, though, that if you haven't done any of the rental properties in the last couple of years where you're not renting out the entire property, you're only renting out pieces of it, that a lot of that can be excluded out and you don't actually recapture that. But again, this is where accountants really earn their worth. And so you might want to talk to your accountant. Anytime that I have rental property involved, I want to have a good accountant keeping track of it. I personally don't want to do it. And I do, I mean, I'm not a foreigner when it comes to taxes. I do okay with them. This is an area that you really want somebody that's detail-oriented and keeps track of it. And what you can do, if you find this person, you know, if you have an accountant, talk to them and say, let's look forward, assuming they don't change the rules, and how is this going to affect our ultimate sale of the property? Now, you're...
Right. One thing that totally took us by surprise, and we did have a tax attorney as our doing our taxes, is that when we took our money out of our savings, it upped our annual income, and therefore our Medicare payment went way up and decreased our Social Security benefits.
Wait, what kind of savings did you have? That you, it must have been an IRA or something then.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. Unfortunately, yes. An IRA distribution is a taxable event. That does raise your adjusted gross income. And if you raise your adjusted gross income too high, we get to pay a higher premium on Medicare Part B and D.
Right. And would we have been better off just taking the equity out of our house then instead of using our IRA? I always felt our tax attorney should have alerted us to this because we really are now penalized again with another loss of our Social Security Medicare costs.
To some degree that may have been a discussion, especially if you're taking out $100,000 at a time. Now, how large is your required minimum distribution? You're 70 plus years old. You had to take some amount of money out of your IRA anyway, right?
Yes, yes.
How much did you have to take out normally?
I don't know, honestly. My husband does all of that.
Okay, was $100,000 a lot more than you normally would take out?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, that is something that somebody probably should have said something. Hey, wait a minute, time out. Do you really want to, because if you're taking $100,000 out of your IRA, most likely you jumped a bracket or two and you paid a lot more in taxes, ignoring the premium on the Medicare side, you probably paid a lot more in taxes than you would have otherwise paid. And to the extent that you could have gotten a loan, especially in the last couple of years where interest rates have been very, very low,
sure,
it might have been better to pay 3 or 4% interest on a loan instead of jumping 10 to 13% in taxes and paying more in this and then paying it off in 3 years, 4 years instead of all at once. Unfortunately,
that's what occurred to me, and I thought after this happened to us that our tax attorney was, I didn't think she gave us a really good advice in that situation, because I said to my husband, why didn't we just take the equity out of our house and make a loan, and that would have been tax deductible for the interest on the loan. And
but Paulette, did you consult her before you took the money out and say, is this the way or is this the way? A lot of accountants, you know, are there to compile the information that's already happened.
But they don't plan.
But they're not looking into the future saying, yes, do this or help you with
this.
You know, so it depends on what you asked this individual.
Yeah.
And if you came to her after the fact, and then there's nothing they could have done anyway. And a lot of tax preparers, their job is to take all the information you give them that has already happened in the previous year and put it on the right places on a tax return.
Right.
They're not there to help you plan. But if you went to them ahead of time and said, I'm thinking about this. Are there other ways to do this? Should I be looking at something else? And what is this going to do to me from a tax standpoint? Okay, they should have been able to bring up some ideas.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help. It really does clarify some things for me. Appreciate your taking my call. Thank you.
Well, we're happy to, Paulette. Now, I don't know what happened with your first remodel.
The contractor obviously didn't work well.
Wow.
That's an expensive redo. I mean, change orders are one thing. That's not a change order. This is a redo.
Yeah, she said they had
basically
they did
take it down to the concrete.
Of a remodel and then had to
basically
redo it,
level it
down to concrete, and then spend another $100,000 to fix it. I mean, I'm not a lawyer or anything, but to me, that's one of those things where maybe you go after the first person that did
the first contractor.
I'm sure they probably thought of that, and maybe there are reasons.
Even if
that,
they may not even be a business.
I don't know, but okay. Now here's another important point that you brought up. We only got a minute, so. When you go to, say, a tax accountant, a tax preparer, their job, as you said, is to take the information that they have and make sure that all the taxes are paid properly.
They're accounting for what has happened already.
Yes.
Their job is to make sure that the lines are filled out properly on the return.
Right. But a tax strategist, somebody like you or somebody...
Well, somebody even a CPA that... You go to them ahead of time and say... I'm looking at what is this going to cost me in taxes? What is this going to affect in the future? And we've had this Medicare premium for many years now, so that's not new information. Are there anything that you can suggest that may help us in this matter?
And they might have suggested
a loan,
home equity line of credit.
Yeah,
I mean, there are a bunch of... I thought your suggestion was correct. You can pay 3 or 4% interest, maybe even 5, I don't know, whatever it costs on a loan, as opposed to having to pay an extra however many thousands of dollars in taxes.
They took $100,000 out. Maybe they could get 100 of it out in the 15 or 50 of it out in the 15% bracket, because all they had was some other minor income. But the other 50 cost them 25%. that's a 10% increase in taxes today. If I took the 50 out this year and then 50 out next year, but I took a $50,000 equity loan, it would have cost me 4% instead of 10%.
That's what planners do, and that's why we're here to help you out. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Give us a call. More of your phone calls, emails, etc. when we come back.
Some people willingly take on risk, like skydivers. They may find risk exhilarating. Most of us would rather avoid risk. When it comes to investing strategies, many investors want to keep their feet on the ground and reduce their exposure to risk. A risk buffer strategy through the purchase of an annuity contract is designed for investors who want the potential for growth when the markets are positive, potentially with some protection from losses when they're not. If you're concerned about stock market volatility and the threat of another market collapse, learn where a risk buffer strategy may fit in your investment mix. You may be able to cover losses to a certain extent when markets decline, but potentially enjoy a reasonable amount of growth when markets rise. Watch an informative short video to learn exactly how a risk buffer strategy works at riskbuffer.com. That's riskbuffer.com. A risk buffer strategy involves purchase of a variable annuity, which is a long-term investment product. Guarantees are based on the claims paying ability of the issuer, subject to their terms and conditions. Securities offered through Lucia Securities, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. A December 2015 Gallup poll found that nearly three-quarters of those surveyed expected this year to start with stock market volatility. Their concerns were valid. According to CNN and other sources, this January was the worst month in the stock market since 2009. But even though we may have anticipated stock market decline, are we prepared for them? Are we prepared if we should see another market meltdown like 2008? Lucia Capital Group invites you to discuss your retirement strategy and review your exposure to potential portfolio losses if stocks stumble. What alternatives to stocks and bonds might you consider adding to your investment mix? Schedule an appointment with your local Lucia Capital Group advisor now. The consultation and review of your current financial plan is free. Call 800-644-1150 to schedule an appointment. That's 800-644-1150. And learn more at WealthEd.com. WealthEd.com. Securities offered through Lucia Securities, LLC, member SIPC, and a subsidiary of Lucia Capital Group, a registered investment advisor. All investments are subject to risk, including loss of principal.
The safety oath. Repeat after me. I will safely bring safety to my facility and keep it safe. I will safely keep my people safe. I will put safety first in everything I do, and I will safely do so with Grainger. When you think safety, think Grainger. Grainger's got over 100,000 safety products to help keep our facility safe and our people safer. When it comes to safety, Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I need to get a grip on my company's spending.
Staples has low prices every day.
So I won't overspend?
Nope. With our price match guarantee, you can always get the lowest price on everything for your office.
Everything?
Everything.
The lowest prices on ink, paper, coffee, ink, folders, notepads, ink, sticky notes, ink, trash pads, ink, binders, and ink?
Need some ink?
A little bit, yeah.
Trust Staples for low prices every day. Staples. Make more happen.
Price match good at checkout for items from retailers operating online in retail stores or products sold and shipped by Amazon. See store staples.com for details.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, Call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Having some fun here on the program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing, talking to you about all different kinds. We had a whole bunch of different great topics so far today from callers, Professor Plum. We've talked about annuities. We've talked about capital gains. We've had some questions on our actual topic, which we really didn't get into at all much.
Much?
Well, we got to a little bit of it, which has to do with selling your home. In fact, I do want to cover a little bit of that now. Just to reiterate, we had started to talk about the fact that years ago, you had to, this is now going on 20 years ago, in order to not pay taxes on the gain of a current primary residence sale, if you were under age 55, you had to take that gain and roll it into a new purchase within 2 years.
Yes.
It's something that was of equal or greater value. And then along the lines, eventually once you hit, say, age 55, you could have a one-time buy down where I think it was $100,000
or $125.
$125 you could keep of capital gains.
You had to move down. And then you could exclude 125 of the gain.
Right, and you could do it once. You could
once
do
in
it,
your lifetime.
Yeah, you couldn't do it again.
And if you happen to get married later in life, and one of you had used the exclusion and the other one hadn't,
it was
it's
used.
Done. Now it's the couple is tainted in that respect.
It was used. So
those are the old
those
rules.
Are the old days. Now, thanks to the 1996 presidential campaign, where things actually worked out in our favor, you can exclude up to $500,000 if you're married, $250,000 of gain.
Single.
If you're single. Now, you must have lived in the residence. It must have been a primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years. You also must have lived in it as your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years. Does not have to be concurrent.
No, the ownership and the use do not have to be concurrent. And if you're a married couple, only one of you has to actually be on title if you file a joint return. So you both have to use it for 2 of the 5 years, but only one has to be on title as long as you sell it and file a joint return for the year you do it. So use is very, very important in the way they're looking at this.
That's right. Now, as far as the ownership rules go, Professor Plum, you don't have to have both spouses that own the house. If you have a married couple, one needs to have met the rules. The other one can just be sort of along for the ride.
Right. And so maybe you guys have been living in together for a couple of years and finally decide to get married. And in the year that you sell it, you file a joint return. You both haven't owned it for 2 years, but you both have lived in it for 2 years.
The use test must be met by both.
And one of you, and this does require a joint return in the year of sale. So as long as you can file a joint return in the year of sale, whether you just never got around to putting the other spouse's name on the title, it doesn't matter at this point. You've both used it. You're both filing as a married couple, filing a joint return. You can get the $500,000.
Now, something that's important now, but is probably more important when things change after 2008, you can use this exclusion once in a 24-month period.
Right. You cannot use it for multiple houses that you've had and you've lived in for 24 months of the past 5 years. And you can't, if it takes a long time to sell one house, and then by the time you sell that one, you're sick of the new house you lived in and you put that one up, there does have to be 24 months between sales. And so you have to make sure that you don't get too carried away. Now, there are some exceptions to the 24-month rule. One of them is health. If you're ordered to leave by a doctor because the area, for whatever reason, is harmful to your health, or job-related moves, they can create a shorter potential time horizon for ownership and use. And they won't give you the full $250,000 or $500,000. They'll give you a shortened amount of exclusion. So if you've only been in there for a year, you could potentially exclude up to $125,000 per owner. So there is a shortening of the time horizon, but a shortening of the exclusion as well for certain exemptions.
Right. Now, we had a call on this earlier. Dan, I think, in Port Orchard, Washington, who was talking about renting out the home.
Now, he has rented it out.
Yes. Well, he was talking about the topic of renting out the home. Now, you have a residence where perhaps you it served as a rental a long time ago, or maybe you lived in it for several many years, and then you decide to turn it into a rental. There are a couple of different rules which involve the year 2008.
Well, and this has to do with selling a property of mixed use. It wasn't always the primary resident. And so what they first went after was something we talked about in 1997, as soon as the law became available. We thought, this is a wonderful thing for somebody who has multiple single-family rentals. A friend of mine has about 12 or 15 single-family rental homes mm-hmm. that he's acquired and maintained over the years. And we thought, and he's got a lot of gain in them, or had a lot of gain in them, so how nice it would be if he could get his wife to move, and every 2 years, in 1997, they move into one property. They sell their primary residence, move into one of their former rental properties, live in it for 2 years, then move out of it, move into another one, sell that primary residence at that point, exclude all the gain, and then do it, and then work through all his rentals if he had wanted to get out of his rentals at that time, and avoid the gain on up to between a married couple, $500,000 a gain. Well, Congress either got wind of this, didn't like it, thought it was too advantageous, whatever the case may be, and in 2008, they passed a new rule that said that if you are selling a primary residence that has any time of ownership where it was not your primary residence, we're going to limit the amount of gain that you can show as primary residence. It doesn't matter when the gain actually happened or any of that. It's just going to look at it as a proration of the gain on the property. This does not change the $250,000-$500,000 potential exemption. It changes how much of the gain on the property can be applied, or the exemption can be applied against. And so what they're looking at is they're going to take the number of months, and they actually do it by days now, that when I was reading this earlier today. They look at the number of days in a year that it was not your primary residence, and then they look at that for all the number of days after 2008. Now, they didn't penalize you for any ownership time prior to 2008 where it was not your primary residence, but they are going to prorate the gain for any time after 2008 that it's not your primary residence. Right. So if I bought a place January 1, 2009, and I've rented it out right up until January 1st, 2016, what's that, 7 years?
Wait, for 2009, yes. You have 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
10 years. No,
7 years. 8 years. Because you sold
9, 10,
it.
10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 15. Only 15, yeah.
15,
seven
yes,
years.
Yes. Okay. Don't make me do math.
And then I move into it January 1st, 2016, and I happen to live there for 3 years, longer than the requirement. I have lived there for at least 20, and then I sell it at the beginning of January 1st, 2019, or 2029. I have lived in it for 2 years of the past five. I qualify for the exclusion of gain because it was my primary residence, but they're going to look at the proration effect now. Over that period of time, I've lived in it for 30% of the time that I owned it after 2008. And I've only owned it since after 2008. So I can only exclude 30% of the gain. So depending upon how much gain I have, if I have $100,000 worth of gain on the property, I can exclude $30,000 of it. If I've got $2 million worth of gain, $600,000 could be applied towards the exemption, but only $500,000 can be excluded because I hit the top of the gain.
Yeah, and it's convoluted. It's a weird kind of
gain on the property is what's prorated.
Not the exclusion.
Not the exclusion.
Right.
So in that example, only 30% could be excluded. Now, if I'd bought the property back in 1979, a long time before.
Yes.
And I've owned it, for 40 years now. They're only going to look at the months that it was not your primary residence after 2008. So my proration of gain goes way up because there was only 7 years out of the 40 that it wasn't my primary residence. And so,
So now you would have, let's call it 8 years out of the 40 to make it easier. What is that, 20%?
Call it 20%.
Right.
So now almost all of the gain, 80% of the gain, can be excluded up to the $500,000 limit if I'm married.
Right. So if you had $400,000 of gain, that would be
320.
300, thank you. 320, 860. Yes, because I can count by eights. So it saves you a whole lot more. Yeah.
So it's only the non-primary residence use time, and non-primary residence doesn't mean rental necessarily. It means exactly what it says, non-primary residence. It could be a vacation house.
Sure.
It could be a house that I bought so my kids could go to school in a certain area. It could be that a place that my parents are living in that I'm maintaining for them to live in. I don't live in it. I'm not renting it to them. They're just staying there. It's a personal property of mine, vacation property, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's not my primary residence. That's all that matters. And the only time that helps or hurts is the time after 2008 in this example.
Yeah, I still don't know why they changed the law. It was a whole lot easier. I think probably because we benefited so much
from the availability.
Well,
some people did.
Well, what we used to do is you'd have somebody had five, six rental properties, and they've had them for a long time. They want to get out of the rental game. So they would do this every 2 years, move into one, live in it for 2 years, establish it as your primary residence, go under all the rules of that, sell it, keep the gain tax-free. Do the same thing down the line, all the way through all the rental properties. And you could do that and wind up with quite a bit of cash.
Right up until they changed the rules on us.
They changed the rules.
It's amazing how they see things as beneficial to us and change the rules.
Isn't it though? Which is why I still don't understand how Roth IRAs got passed. I mean, I can't think of a single bad thing.
And haven't been taken back.
That haven't been taken back. I can't think of anything about a Roth that I really don't like. Can you?
I'd like them to give me a tax deduction for putting the money in.
I suppose there's always something. All right, we got some trivia, what's coming up tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. More of your phone calls and emails as well. 877-PLANNER. Get on board. It's Bucket Strategy Investing.
Are you worried we may see another stock market drop like the 2008 collapse? In a new video, Ray Lucia Jr. comments on investor concerns.
They're worried about what happens when this bull market eventually ends and how severe of a downturn there may be for them in the future.
If you're looking for some potential protection from volatility, learn about the risk buffer strategy by watching a free video now at riskbuffer.com.
For those investors who want to take some risk off the table of their longer-term portfolios, a risk buffer strategy may be appropriate for you.
Depending on the investor, there are many ways this strategy may potentially be added to your investment mix. Please take 10 minutes to watch a free video in which Ray Lucia Jr. explains the risk buffer strategy and how it may work for you at riskbuffer.com. That's riskbuffer.com. A risk buffer strategy involves purchase of a variable annuity, which is a long-term investment product. Guarantees are based on the claims-paying ability of the issuer subject to their terms and conditions. Ray Lucia Jr. is the CEO of Lucia Securities, LLC, member FINRA SIPC, and affiliate of Lucia Capital Group.
If you were born on or after January 2nd, 1954, listen carefully. Recent changes enacted by the Social Security Administration as part of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015 may impact your Social Security benefits. The policy that previously enabled spouses at full retirement age to claim spousal benefits while allowing their own benefit to grow has been discontinued. This could mean the accrual of additional benefits may no longer be available to you. Changes will also soon be implemented regarding file and suspend claiming strategies. Find out the latest rules, regulations, and restrictions by calling the Social Security hotline at 800-838-0483. The call is free and may clarify some of the new Social Security rules that could affect your benefits. If you were born after January 2nd, 1954, you could be affected. Call 800-838-0483. 800-838-0483. The Social Security hotline is not endorsed by or a service of the Social Security Administration or any government agency. Lucia Capital Group is not affiliated with the Social Security Administration.
After a rough day on the range, a feller can get a bit saddle sore. That's why I use Blue Emu Original Super Strength Cream. It works fast and penetrates deep to soothe my tired muscles and joints.
And he don't stink.
And I'll tell you one thing. I had no idea this stuff was so darn handy.
Blue Emu Original Super Strength Cream. Available at all major retailers. It works fast for long-lasting soothing of tired muscles and joints.
And you won't stink.
U2 America TV, featuring original live programs created with you in mind. Engage with shows through social media and the U2 America app. America Trends with Dr. Gina covers the trending topics of the day and allows viewers to interact with the show. Sully's Biz Brew is business with a barroom slant, delivered with a twist. Visit U2America.com to find a channel near you. U2 America, red, white, and you.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money,
Almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975 for your free health insurance quote. Call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370, call 800-605-5370.
I like this song. I like this song. Everybody's okay with it? All right, good. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Mark that number down because you'll need it when you need to get in touch with the Brain Trust. A lot of great phone calls today and topics. It's been a wonderful show. We appreciate everybody being with us today. We did not cover everything, although we did pretty well on the selling your home topic. We did not get into selling it as we did talk a little about investment property, but doing something called a 1031 exchange. We'll cover that in another program, 1031 reverse starkers and all that kind of thing. If you have rental property or investment property, let's put it that way, investment property, and you don't want to pay the capital gains taxes on it, you want to roll it into a new property, there are ways to do that through what's called a 1031 exchange. We'll talk about that some other time. Coming up on this program tomorrow, we're talking about something that is used, they've gained a lot in popularity. They're called target date funds. Now, a target date fund is a specific type of fund where you... I'm getting rubber biscuit in my head now. It's a kind of a fund where you throw it off the wall. No.
And you hope you get some return back.
Exactly. That's kind of what it is. I was trying to think, but thank you for that. Yes. A target date fund is...
It's a one-stop shop.
Yes. It's you give us your money, you tell us the date you're going to retire, 2035, 2040, 2050, whatever, and we will take care of, make sure that you get your funds, get your money gets safer and safer as you approach retirement.
Let's say... less volatile. I don't want to say safer.
Well, I've seen that. I've seen them use that.
Yeah, but the term just bugs me because...
Of course it does.
You know, the target dates in 2010 target dates in 2008 dropped like 26%. Is that safe?
No, it's not safe, and that's one of the reasons
why... It was less volatile than the market as a whole.
Exactly.
But it wasn't safe.
So that's why, it's one of the reasons why we're going to be talking about this tomorrow. There are ways to use target date funds.
Uh-huh.
That can actually be beneficial, but it may not be in the way that the folks who set them up have intended. But if you look at people's 401ks, a lot of them are just rife with target date funds.
Well, they've taken away a lot of the funds because target dates are taken over in some areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because I guess they're easy for people.
They're very easy.
Hand me your money and we'll, you know, you worry your pretty little head about it, is what they're saying.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah, are they easy? Well, to understand them, I mean, to use them properly, you really want to understand them. So I wouldn't say they're easy. They seem like they should be very easy. And they seem like something that everybody wants, a set it and forget it type of thing where somebody does the management for me for basically very little expense.
Mm-hmm.
But are they easy to understand in reality? Well, we'll talk about that tomorrow.
We will. Strategy also. Okay, let's get to, before we get to the next email, by the way, 877-PLANNER, if you want to call, we got just a few minutes left here. But before we get to the next email, this is today's trivia from the Federal Reserve. Maybe you could make heads or tails out of this, Professor Plum. The nation's household debt service ratio, which, by the way, is defined as debt service payments and financial obligations stated as a percentage of disposable personal income, all right? That's the nation's household debt service ratio, was 10.07% as of the fourth quarter 2015. Now that's down from 13.21% as of the fourth quarter of 2007. This statistic has been tracked by the government since 1980, and until the fourth quarter of 2012 had never been below 10%. So now, you're listening to that, you're saying that was just a bunch of words. What does that mean? Well, Professor Plum, does this mean then that as of 2015, since the ratio is smaller, huh?
Well, I'm trying to figure out, there's a lot going on here, and I think part of it is the actual definition of disposable personal income. What is disposable personal income? Is it after my tax obligations? Is it after my tax obligation and fixed expenses like a mortgage? I don't know. So I think we'd have to look up disposable personal income, and I was trying to do that very quickly, didn't get there in time, to find out what exactly the definition is. Because we talk about, 10%? So if somebody makes $100,000 on average, that only $10,000 a year, 10%, is going towards debt service?
That doesn't sound right to
me. Including mortgage? Heck, I think that that's personal. That's the credit card. But a lot of people are doing credit card income that high, $1,000 a month.
If you look at people's mortgage, just their mortgage alone, I would think, is in the 30%.
Well, that's the normal ratio, but not everybody has a mortgage or not everybody is always maxed out. We just talk about the people that are all maxed out.
So they're talking about the nation as a whole, including people that don't have a mortgage and all that. It just didn't. It seemed odd. So,
well, according to one area on the internet that's talking about dictionaries and things, disposable personal income is the total amount after taxes have been paid. So if I make $100,000 and I pay $10,000 in federal taxes and $3,000, $4,000 in state taxes, that means my disposable personal income is $87,000. By that metric, my out-of-pocket expenses are $8,700 a year. What's that, $800 a month? Or It's less than $740 a month. And somebody that's got $100,000 income is probably paying a little bit more than $700 a month in mortgage and payments and other things. So I don't know where they came up with this stat.
I don't know where they came up with it either. But anyway, I thought I'd throw it out there. Maybe you folks know. All right, we got 2 minutes. Let's say Kyle in Redlands, California has a question. My employer has a profit-sharing plan that is paid into by the employer contributions only. Okay, well, I was told that I cannot contribute to an IRA because of that profit-sharing plan. Is that true? Can I also not contribute to a Roth IRA?
Well, actually, no, it's not true. You can contribute. The question is, can you deduct the contribution that you're making to a traditional IRA? A profit-sharing plan is a qualified retirement plan. It is a company-sponsored retirement plan. And so because you are a participant in a company-sponsored retirement plan, you have to look at what your adjusted gross income is to determine whether or not you can actually deduct the contribution to an IRA, a traditional IRA. Unless you're 70 and a half or older, as long as you have earned income, you can contribute to a traditional IRA, but it may not be deductible. And if you can't deduct it, I'm not sure that there's much use in making the contribution unless you can go to a Roth. So whether or not you can deduct it is the issue. Now, did he say he was married or single?
Doesn't say anything about that at all.
Depending upon how much you make, you may or may not be able to deduct the contribution. You have to look at the limits. And I would say that if you are not able to deduct the contribution, look at the Roth IRA. See if you can still be qualified for a Roth contribution. If you're making under the threshold, the threshold for a deduction of an IRA contribution is less than the threshold for a Roth contribution. See if you can't deduct it, see if you can do Roth instead.
There you go. Thank you for that, Kyle. We're out of time for this hour. If you need the Brain Trust at any time, whether we're on the show or not, you can reach Professor Rick Plum or any or all of Lucia Capital Group Advisors, the Brain Trust, at their off-air number. Talk to them, 800-644-1150. Have them work out a bucket strategy just for you. We're out of time. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.